Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Lee Cantor here with Stone Payton, another episode of Atlanta Business Radio. And Stone, this can be a fun one.
Hey, man, this is going to be a marvelous show. Please join me in welcoming to the broadcast. First up on Atlanta Business Radio this morning, Senior VP Recruiting Strategy and Innovation with Randstad US, Miss Jennifer Seeth. Good morning.
Good morning.
Well, Jennifer, before we get too far into things, tell us kind of a big picture view of Randstad. How are you serving folks?
Oh, goodness. Randstad is the world's largest staffing company. We put to work, at least in the United States, over 100,000 people a week.
Wow.
Yes, a week. And so we are very, very, very well poised to see what's happening in skills and see what's happening in the world of work. And that's why I'm here today to talk about the future of work and what the challenges are.
So let's start. A word that's been buzzing around is called upskilling. Do you know anything about that?
A little bit. Just a little bit. So upskilling, I think, is really interesting. And it's a good thing to define, I think, for our listeners, is it's part of an overarching definition of skills, right? Upskilling and reskilling are used interchangeably, and they're not the same thing. So if you think about upskilling, you think about the definition of retraining people in their current jobs to learn new skills to stay in their current jobs. Mm-hmm. But reskilling is very different. So reskilling is much more about teaching people in current jobs a new skill to do a different job. So you look at what a lot of companies like Amazon, right? Amazon invested, what, $700 million to skill workforces to learn new skills. And part of their reskilling effort was to take their warehouse workers and reskill them into new skills. So warehouse workers can now become nurses and Amazon pays for it. That's a reskill. But an upskill would be a web developer learning a new language so that they could stay with your organization and continue to work for you. That's the difference.
So now in the education system we have right now, it's challenging for a lot of students to just skill, you know, basic skills. Yeah. What kind of mindset shift is it for them when they're now being told, okay, I wasn't great at school, I got this job, and I'm doing the best I can. And then now the expectation is that what I brought to the table myself isn't enough, that I have to kind of adapt and become this lifelong learner. Yeah. When I might have already defined myself as somebody that learning's not my thing.
Yeah. I mean, here's the deal. And it's a shift for all of us, I think, especially for those of us around this table at, quote, our age, right? We have to become lifelong learners. And what you look at now is that the World Economic Forum just basically said 42% of the core skills that we're using now in our jobs today are not going to be the skills that are going to be needed in 2022. So if the vast majority of the skills we're using today aren't going to be around, we have to learn constantly. And what we're finding is that soft skills are becoming more important. And so I think.
So let's define some terms. Like, what are soft skills?
Yep. So adaptability, communication, collaboration, teamwork, believe it or not, punctuality, showing up for work on time is a soft skill. Those sorts of things, customer service, being able to work with people is a really big deal. And so if any of you are parents, we talk about, you know, we push our kids to go to STEM programs and learn all of those hard skills. The fact of the matter is, it sounds silly, but putting them into summer jobs, working in a grocery store or at a restaurant to teach them how to interact with people is almost as critical nowadays as teaching them to go learn a web developing language.
Now, is that kind of a disconnect for a lot of the young people out there because they spend so much of their time online or virtually that they don't have those kind of just human skills that maybe older folks were forced to have because there was a lack of technology?
Big time. And, you know, I've been working with a couple of partners. Most companies nowadays are talking to partners about how can we use different online skills training courses. And I've been working with a couple of partners, and the things that I hear over and over again are they offer courses and they watch what candidates or people come to take. And people will log online and take a web development course or a customer skills course. But then they immediately go into soft skills and they take things like stress management or conflict resolution or negotiation or strategy skills. And they're watching more and more people take those skills and they're starting to push people to those skills. And as the online learning platforms do that, based on the different types of actual hard skills people take, I think young people will start to understand that it's as critical as it is. But education needs to push that as well.
So now ultimately, is this something, it's kind of a chicken and egg, right? Like the employer has to encourage this, but ultimately the employee has to take the action to do this. So how do they meet in the middle?
Yeah, that's really the hardest part right now is employees are, I don't want to say lazy is not a nice word, but at the end of the day, employees have got to pay attention to what job they're in and what their long-term goal is. And they have got to look at the job that they're in and understand what it could become. And so they've got to understand that they have to continue to learn. And then companies have got to also figure out a way to keep them engaged. And it doesn't have to be expensive. I think that's a really big misnomer, is that people think about learning development as this multi-million dollar thing. You know, Amazon spent $700 million. You don't have to spend that much money. You can have lunch and learns and webinars and things like that that actually keep your employees engaged. And you have to meet in the middle, and you have to try to keep your employees engaged to understand the critical, the need of it.
So now how does Randstad fit into this conversation? When you're working with the larger organizations, is this something that you offer, this kind of filling the gap to help get their people that they need ready for action? Or is it something that also you're helping the employees get trained up so they are ready to at least have a mindset shift so they can be open to this rapid change that's coming?
Yeah, we're working towards that. I think most organizations are in sort of this middle area where we're working towards that. When you place as many people as we do, you really have to pay attention to certain areas and really have to prioritize, if you will. We're looking at the types of jobs our talent is in. We're looking at the way those jobs are shifting and working with our talent to figure out what are the most critical things they need to learn and figure out where they need to move. And as we prioritize some of those talent types, then we'll work to help scale those talent types into new roles. But when you think about the most critical areas like data and analysis and healthcare and engineering and even, you know, welding and manufacturing skills, those are the areas that we'll focus on.
Now, is there any effort being done to have some of this kind of thinking trickle down into the like public school systems to get the kids when they're younger and before they maybe have some bad habits or lowered expectations? Is there anything happening to help a curriculum understand where these are the challenges that are happening today in real time? And a lot of times the schools aren't kind of leaders in this instance of getting people prepared for the future that lies ahead, that they're using techniques that may have been effective, you know, decades ago.
There are a lot of gaps between education and government. There just really are. And there are a lot of organizations like ourselves who are partnering with the World Economic Forum and a lot of other global organizations from a public policy perspective that are going to a lot of these meetings to talk through those issues. What you find now is a lot of big organizations taking it upon themselves to do this.
Right, so, because, well, this is life or death.
It is.
Like, they can't wait. You know, they got to solve these problems today.
It is. And that's why you see companies like Amazon and Salesforce and people like that just investing the money.
Right. I'm going to grow my own people.
Because they're not doing it with the government. Right. So there's a big push on the part of organizations to push government to do something. But as you can imagine, it's not a small or incomplex.
Right. And they don't move as fast as these businesses need them to move.
No, not even close.
Now, from your standpoint, are you bullish from the young people that you're working with and these organizations, or you think, is this a problem that is solvable, or is this just kind of a bridge too far?
I think it's solvable. I think it has got to start from the ground level up. I think organizations can only do so much. And at the end of the day, some organizations there will always be a line between altruism and business, right? And so there is a need to do the right thing. There is also a need to continue to drive your business forward. And so at the end of the day, education systems and governments do need to come together to make a difference. Mm-hmm. And if business has to drive them to make that difference, then that's what we have to do. And so my hope is that businesses like ourselves will continue to push those agendas and initiatives forward so that it can be solvable, but more quickly. And I think the World Economic Forum and OECD and some of those larger public policy initiatives are doing that.
Now, what are some of the low-hanging fruit that organizations can do that don't have the budgets of an Amazon or Salesforce?
Oh, yeah. That I think is fun. An organization I actually used to work for, they would bring in specialists from the outside. Like if you had a network of people who, say, you know, worked in product development or worked in, you know, engineering or something, they would bring in outside speakers to just talk to people, lunch and learns, webinar series. investing small amounts of money into some of these online training courses. You look at Udemy or Coursera or some of these types of places where courses can be anything from $12 to $100. Mm-hmm. You can invest $100 in an employee with the hope that they'll redeploy for you, right? That's a small investment in a long-term gain that doesn't require you to go out and hire new talent. And so you can make small investments that can make a huge difference in your employees' lives in addition to your bottom line.
Now, is this something that's only a big company problem, or is this trickled down to companies of all sizes?
All sizes. And you think about web development, you think about anything digital, anything tech. I don't care, you know, if you're a 5-person shop or a 10-person shop. A 5-person shop may even have higher attrition because those folks, like say you're a digital shop, may want to go to a larger company because of the benefits they provide. If you're not providing educational opportunities as a smaller organization, they're going to leave and go someplace where they are providing them. So you've got to provide growth in this.
Well, I was talking to a CEO the other day, and his concern, he was hiring somebody, and they're a small firm, probably less than 10 employees. And they're like, I don't know if I can invest in a young person because I'm afraid they're going to leave. Like, right. That's just part of their DNA, and I just can't afford to invest in a young person and train them to go to my competitor or somewhere else in the industry. Yep. Like that to him, it was black and white. That was simple. I have to hire an older person.
Yeah. And that you hear that a lot, but you also need to think about, it's almost a build versus buy scenario. If you have an organization of people who have really good soft skills that are willing to learn, you can train internally. So you can train somebody who has communication and teamwork and all of those things to learn to code,
right?
Easier than you can somebody who has great coding skills to learn to be a great team member, right? So you could literally train your own internal workforce sometimes easier.
Now, for you and at Randstad, how are you working with these enterprise companies? Or that I would assume that's where you spend a lot of your time, is with companies of a certain size.
Yeah.
So now, what does an engagement look like if you're trying to help them with this upskilling challenge?
Well, a couple of different things. It depends on the line of business. So when it comes to things like manufacturing, we're working with some of our customers to say, okay, you have a large manufacturing base and you always need people in your plants, for example. You'll always need, you know, picker packers or forklift operators. And this is not a funny joke, but the world is not breeding forklift operators, right? We're just not. Excuse me.
And you're not going to find them the college degree in forklift operating.
You're not. But at the end of the day, there are situations where you can find people who want to train into forklift operations. Mm-hmm. So we talk to those organizations. We learn what their internal upskilling and skilling looks like. And then we also talk to the local schools in some areas to find out what they're offering. We have some veterans initiatives for apprenticeship programs that are mm-hmm. really exciting around coding and veterans that are coming out of the service. And so we work with the individual organizations and individual veterans to see where they're going to as well.
And then so you become kind of a matchmaker?
A little bit. Yeah. It depends on the organization and the skill type, like I said, but we can become a matchmaker in that scenario.
And then for you, what is the thing you need more of right now?
Data and AI is the big thing from a tech perspective. So everyone needs data architects. Everyone needs web developers are the big thing. Nurses. Anybody in the care skilling. Manufacturing. Manufacturing, believe it or not, welders, forklift operators, people in warehouses. And going back to tech, it's a lot of tech right now.
And if somebody wanted to learn more, are you available to speak at organizations or help them organize these lunch and learns and things like that?
Absolutely. I'd be happy to.
And then if they want to get a hold of you, what's the best coordinates of Randstad and maybe connect with you personally?
Yeah, sure. My email address is easy. Well, actually, it's hard. It's
well, this
it's
is
long.
The first skill they have to master.
This is a skill you have to measure. You have to learn to memorize. Did you say it? Okay, yeah. So my email address is jennifer@randstadusa.com. Or I can give you my phone number, which is also easy, which is 312-206-7354. And I'd be happy to chat.
And the website for Randstad?
Is www.randstadusa.com.
Good stuff. Well, thank you so much for sharing your story today, Jennifer.
Thank you for having me.
Hey, stay with us for a little bit. We're going to visit with one more guest, okay? Awesome. All right. Next up on Atlanta Business Radio, Lee, we have with us co-author with The Success Cadence, Unleash Your Organization's Rapid Growth Culture, Mr. Bart Finelli. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. How is everybody?
Hey, doing well, man. What'd you learn in that last segment?
Well, I learned that Jennifer is actually a customer of the company that I work for as my day job.
Is that right?
Yes, that's correct. So Randstad and OutSystems have a relationship out of the Netherlands. So we're a low-code software development platform, and we actually do upskilling and reskilling across the globe to help people be more successful in their careers. So there's some synergy here.
There you go.
Yeah, absolutely. And tech is a big deal right now.
So now, what compelled you to co-author this book?
Well, so I've been in tech my whole life, in tech leadership globally, and had the good fortune of being with a rapid growth company that we implemented many of the practices outlined in the book. It worked exceptionally well. And now we have taken that on the road, and I'm also implementing it at the current organization that I run. Without systems. So there's a lot of synergy right here at this table.
Good stuff. Well, tell us about the Success Cadence.
Success Cadence is really, if you think about everybody's day job, we're all running businesses in some sort, whether you're a division of a business or you're that 10-person company that we talked about just a little while ago, where we weren't sure if we were going to train the people we had or that are young, maybe a millennial, or we had need to stay with a legacy employee. Well, the whole idea is you can't scale a company unless you scale your talent, and your talent has to be coachable. They have to be willing to learn. And if they're not willing to learn, then they shouldn't be, they likely shouldn't be kept. Unfortunately, it's hard to say that, but that's a fact, because we have a responsibility to our businesses and to ourselves to grow. So coaching and upskilling and reskilling they all go together.
So now, is this book for the leaders or is this book for the employees?
It's for both. It is primarily a leadership book. Most of the readers today are C-level or senior executives. However, when contributors or line-level leaders pick it up, they usually have something positive to say about it. They've learned something that maybe their senior executives are thinking that they can benefit from. So it doesn't discriminate. However, most executives find it useful.
Now, is it one of those books that are theoretical, or are there actionable things that I can read this and I can implement this pretty quickly?
My favorite question. There's no theory in the book whatsoever. It is 100% real-time application of how to scale a company or an organization from bottoms up.
Okay, walk me through scale my Business Radio X. How would you attack it?
How would I attack it? Well, so if I'm a leader in Business Radio X, then most of my employees have to have certain skills depending on what division they're in, and they have to be coachable or they have to be willing to do it. So if I'm really focused on scaling a business, I need to take those employees and make sure they have the exact skills that I know they need to scale the company. And if they're not willing to learn those new skills, which we were talking about earlier, then I have to make a choice as an employer to either keep them and deal with their inability to be coachable, which likely affects my culture negatively, or I have to gracefully find a better alternative for their employment and then find someone that's willing to do the job. So it sounds a little bit terse, but unfortunately, business does not grow unless we are all aligned and we're operating in a very similar cadence.
Now, what about a company that's small and maybe can't afford A players? Should they get a bunch of B and C players to make up for that?
So it depends how you define an A player, but I'll tell you what I'll take all day long as an executive leader. I'll take someone that has the willingness to learn and grit and work hard over someone that is a real smartass and super skilled. That doesn't work. Mm-hmm. It'll kill a culture before anything.
So it has to be culture fit.
Culture fit and willing to learn, period.
If you had those two qualities, you think you can make anybody effective in an organization?
Absolutely. Lifelong, back to Jennifer's comment, lifelong learning is without question the key to success and scale.
And that's non-negotiable in today's world.
Non-negotiable. Absolutely.
Like there's no longer jobs that you'll be able to keep for any length of time that you just do the same thing that you did yesterday and the day before.
You're exactly right. That is, if there's anything that an individual listener that doesn't lead an organization can learn from this session, it's adaptability, coachability, and lifelong learning, without a doubt.
So now, when a person reads this book and they start implementing these ideas and they start kind of really putting their employees under the microscope, right? Because they have to, this is tough love, right? Because like you said, if they're not a right fit, you got to free up their future. They're not helping anybody. They have to, it's not going to be the right for that individual over time.
That's
if
right.
The company's rapidly growing and then more and more of their kind of quirks and negative things they're bringing to the table are being shown. It's not helping them.
Exactly. In fact, you know, tough love is one way to describe it. I think we're doing those that don't want to come on the journey, those that don't want to be coachable, a favor, and we're actually making their lives a little bit easier by letting them go home to their family and do something that they're maybe more well suited to do.
Right.
And if they're not coachable, let's not be coachable somewhere else.
Well, or they're just not coachable in your situation. They could be perfectly coachable in another person's organization.
Totally right. Yeah, that's exactly right.
So now, can you describe some of the low-hanging fruit? We mentioned some of the scrutiny of the employees, but what are some of the other aspects of the success cadence that I can implement in an organization?
So it all starts essentially with an operational calendar. If you think about everything we have to do to run a business, it usually happens within a sequence, and it happens daily, it happens weekly, it happens monthly, and it happens quarterly. If I'm publicly traded, it happens quarterly 4 times a year, and then we're measured on it. So if you're running a business that intends to be analytically driven and has to report to investors or even to our senior team, then we have to have a corporate calendar that aligns in sequence within every organization and every role. That's the easiest fix for any stagnating business. If you can get that sequence right, then running the business becomes easy.
So what are some of the questions the leader asks his team or her team to get that sequence correct?
Well, since it's date-driven, it's actually easier than that. If you have a reporting period, as an example, we call it a waterfall in our organization or in our company. We have a board that invests and helps us guide our business. We report to that board on a specific date every quarter. And then in sequence, there's a series of either meetings, data collection points, operational deliverables that occur all the way back to the beginning of every quarter.
So how do you define the key metrics, the numbers that matter?
The numbers that matter depends on the business at hand. So as an example, if it's a revenue, software revenue business or a recurring revenue business, that might be one of the variables. Then we need to stay in alignment with that particular measurable element on a weekly basis, typically at every layer in every organization globally, which requires orchestration. And if it's out of sequence, then when I'm going to report the business, typically a few percentage points matters everywhere. It starts to become very significant.
So now how do you prioritize the numbers that matter in terms of, you know, different groups and different constituents can think their numbers matter more than the others. And so how do you kind of get that alignment of saying, okay, these are the numbers, these three numbers, not these 100 numbers?
Yeah, you usually fight that out very aggressively.
That's where the A players kind of show themselves.
Yeah, well, unfortunately, sometimes the A players, the A players that aren't graceful think they're A players and they end up decimating businesses. It happens all the time, or they're too forceful. So actually what you're hitting on is, we try to avoid silos at all costs in our business and in the businesses that, read the success cadence. So when organizations run as silos and don't define, their operating model together, then they clash on the numbers, and typically that becomes the decline of the business.
Right, but don't most organizations think they don't have a silo problem? until the next consultant they hire or the next leader comes in and says that we had a silo problem?
If any organization doesn't believe they have a silo problem, they're done. We all do. As hard as we work, it's the cadence and the sequencing of that dialogue and that exchange actually is what helps eliminate it. But it will always be an issue at certain levels within organizations.
Now, how do you help the organization that maybe is starting to get some traction and they're about to kind of get into that high growth mode where growth is happening fast and furiously and they can't hire fast enough? And, you know, at one point you're hiring very strategically and then you know the people and you're friends of friends and you got some relationship. But when you're growing so quickly that people are coming on board, you have no idea who they were or where they came from. And all of a sudden the organization exploded. Like, how do you implement something this strategic into a fast moving ship like that?
Yeah, very good question. So I'll use software, high growth software as the example. One of the tenets when you're hiring is you have to hire from your own network. So therefore,
that's a non-negotiable rule in your book.
It's a non-negotiable in the company, in my organizations.
Really?
Yeah.
That's hard to do. That puts a lot of pressure on your leadership to have really good networks.
It really does. And if you hire really good leaders, they have really good networks.
They should, right? They come hand in hand.
That's exactly right. Yep. So you got to hire from your own network because you have skin in the game when you do that.
That's an important point that I want the listener who is the employee to understand that it's important for them to get a good network too, because that's, if those leaders are hiring that way, they better get on the radar of those leaders.
That's right. So it comes down to personal brand. It comes down to execution philosophy and coachability. If you're not coachable, it's pretty difficult to build a network. Mm-hmm. You usually have to fall into form with some executive, peer executive, or group that you go on a journey with, and like minds typically run together. And success mindset typically runs together, meaning possibility over no, that's not possible. So the possibility mindset is really key. That's actually a tenet from Sandler Training, if you're familiar with Sandler, who's the co-author of the book. They really focus high on mindset and cultural fit. And if you have the right mindset, really anything's possible, but you have to be coachable, period.
Now, there's something in the book called willingness line. Can you talk about that?
Yeah. So willingness, there's willingness and ability. There's two vectors, if you think of it. I can have all the ability in the world, and if I'm not willing to operate the way the company I'm working for needs me to operate to be successful, then I'm not valuable. I'm really not. Unless I'm running it and I have better ideas than everybody and I've proven that I can be successful at scale without breaking anything. The willingness component is typically cultural. However, the big focus for us is on coachability, willing to learn new things and be fair and equitable, be gracious to my partner employees or my other orgs and collaborate, expose data, rather than being a tyrant, so to speak. And that is absolutely unnegotiable.
Now, your background's in sales, and you're partnered with Sandler Training, which is sales training. Tell me about hiring those salespeople. Is it the same premise of, you know, the attitude, the soft skills, and I'll train them on the details of my thing so I can take somebody from another industry that has the right personality and maybe softer skills, and I can teach them kind of the nuances of my business because I'll be able to coach them up.
You're absolutely. So the willingness side being, I think the leading indicator, of someone being successful within a new business is definitely key. I suspect regardless of what industry you're in, You can bring someone that has the willingness to learn, the drive, the desire, and the grit, regardless of education, especially in sales.
Now, when you say that, regardless whether they're a college graduate or not?
Yeah, absolutely. Regardless.
Regardless. Does not matter.
Well, if you look at Amazon, Salesforce, Google, they've made it irrelevant for a degree to hire. Now, the level that you come in at is may be subject to your education, but if you're a salesperson and you're willing to grind from the bottom up, doesn't matter. There's really no limit.
Now, do you, can you share maybe a story that illustrates the success cadence in action that a company maybe grew or was able to be turned around?
Not turned around, but I'll say the one that really spawned the idea for the book. So Splunk, which is probably one of the best, publicly traded, software companies out there right now, and joined it in 2010 under leadership of Tom Schodorf and Godfrey Sullivan, who was the CEO at the time. Tom ran the global field organization. And we built an operational model that helped the company grow at the time from roughly $50 million to $1.5 billion when I exited the business, about $800 million when Tom exited the business. It goes strong today. They're north of $2.5 billion and growing 40 to 50% a year. Unbelievable success story. And everything we learned about implementing an operational model and grooming salespeople and technical resources and leadership in a form of discipline, meaning on a vector of either willing and able, that's the book. We based it on the on everything we learned.
And then so you broke it down into kind of bite-sized chunks that the person can implement. And then you mentioned the order is sequence is important.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's broken down into bite-sized pieces, regardless of role, that can be applied, regardless of industry. It just happens to be based on our high growth experience at Splunk.
And then I have a question about sales. Do you think that you can take anybody who's never sold before with the right attitude and train them to be an effective salesperson? Like, are salespeople born or made?
Oh, they're made. There is no doubt in my mind. There is this misnomer that sales is like some magical art, and it is absolutely not. You have to be interpersonal, clearly, and you have to be able to connect with people. However, you can learn and master selling without question, regardless of your industry. And it is unique in every industry, by the way. There are different levels of skills to selling that are required depending on the business that you're in. So as long as you have a foundational ability to interact with people and you understand that selling is a method and there are unique things you have to learn, you can be a seller.
Even if the method requires kind of these softer skills that require nuance and subtlety? That it isn't like go down a checklist of
no,
say
it's
these
not a
four.
It's
not like an order taker.
Oh God, no! Thank you for no checklists. It is nuanced, and you have to be able to go from what I'll say. There might be a black and white checklist of six things, but getting those things accomplished in an elegant way requires the ability to learn and interact and have soft skills, like Jennifer mentioned.
So you think that's trainable?
That's absolutely trainable.
Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely.
Good stuff.
Look at me.
Look at you. Go ahead.
I think, can he be trained is the question.
I don't know.
I'm pretty sure.
That's my book. It's called Untrainable.
You're asking good questions. You're obviously trainable.
<He's asking. laughs>
Yeah, I do believe that it is. But it's a mindset. If you're not willing to learn things like that, there's no way. Mm-hmm. Closed mindset, possibilities mindset.
Right. Well, that seems to be the heart of this. You have to get the right people or else the organization's not going to be successful over time.
I'll tell you, you can have the greatest product in the world. It will not sell itself. In fact, the wrong people will crush your business in a heartbeat.
So now if somebody wanted to learn more, is there a consultancy built around this or is this book by itself?
No, Sandler, sandler.com. David Mattson's the CEO. I've known and worked closely with David for a really long time. Mm-hmm. He's a co-author of the book. Tom Schodorf is a co-author. And Bart Finelli, I'm the third.
And then so the book is a kind of a roadmap to implement for any organization, but high growth especially.
If you want to grow, it's the book. Yep. If you're into hyper growth, it's the only way to do it repeatably with predictability, and do it in a graceful way.
Now, if somebody wanted to get their hands on it, where can they find it?
Amazon.com or Sandler.com.
And then for you, if they want to get a hold of you, what's the best way to get a hold of you?
Through LinkedIn or bart.finelli@outsystems.com. I am a working executive with OutSystems. However, I'll turn you on to the right people at Sandler, and or you know, you can hire me for your board.
There you go. Well, Bart, thank you so much for sharing your story and best of luck with the book.
Thank
the
you so
Success
much.
Cadence. Unleash your organization's rapid growth culture. Find it at Amazon. Thanks, Bart.
Thank you.
All right. This is Lee Cantor for Stone Payton. We will see you all next time on Atlanta Business Radio.